Sometimes life feels out of our control. We get stuck in trauma, old patterns, and change feels out of reach. Sometimes it feels like fate. We want to help you break out of old, unhelpful patterns and become healthier. We're Fate Resilience, taking control of the outcome.
With licensed therapists, Jennifer Oxford,
Taylor Madsen,
Haley Mayer.
So we've been talking about motivation if you've been following along with us the last couple episodes. And today we're going to talk about outcome resistance. If we break
That's a scary term. So yeah, break it down.
I was going to say, I think we need to break this down.
Join the collective.
I am sure that there's a more clean definition, but if you break it down, it means that you don't, the outcome will change something, or it might be uncomfortable, or you might lose something in the process of the outcome. And so you start to resist it, and that actually eats away at some of your motivation. And one of the things that I was talking even to a client this week who had set some intentions for the year with their therapy goals. So not quite, what's the New Year's resolution, but just a topic. And as they've been working on this, they've started to feel better in some ways, but they realize as their anxiety goes down that they were actually using their anxiety to get ahead in other areas of their life. And so now they're like, wait, but if I actually manage my anxiety, what if I'm not as good at my job? Or what if people don't like me as much? Or what if, you know, I don't have the same friends, or if I need to meet new people, or if I need to actually go to bed on time and I have to give up that show I stay up all night watching, all those things that come up.
Yeah, before streaming was invented. Absolutely.
Right. And so the reality is when we do improve our lives, there's going to be some changes that are both positive, but some we might actually have to grieve a little bit.
Yeah, the example you gave is the one that Dr. David Burns, who came up with the term outcome resistance, shared. He retired a little more than 10 years ago, I think. Don't quote me on that. Don't put it on a calendar. And this person who was expecting to be drafted really early in the NFL, I'm not going to say what pick, but it was a really high pick. Really high anxiety, very high performer in the college level of football, and just was struggling to cope with the anxiety. And he tracked down Dr. David Burns, said, nope, I have to work with you. No one else will work with me. He's like, well, you know, tough. I'm retired. Let me put you in touch with some really excellent colleagues. And he's like, nope, has to be you. And so Dr. David Burns was like, fine, I'll talk to you once. And I'm still surprised that he talked to me to it. But so he talks to him and he's like, okay, well, you know, how does the anxiety affect you? Something to that effect. And he was like, well, I train 6 hours a day. You know, I'm sure it's more than that outside of the practice that he does with his team. And I won't share the position because I don't want anyone guessing who this person was. And he's like, wow, sounds like your anxiety is really working for you. What draft pick are you again? And he's like, you know, I'm this draft pick number. He's like, oh, I mean, do you really want to get rid of the anxiety? It sounds like because of the anxiety, you work really hard and now you're expecting.
Propels you.
Yeah, it's, are you sure you want to get rid of this? He's like, oh, good point. And then he no longer felt anxious, but he kept the drive. Often, sometimes it's called secondary gains. Like, what is it about my problem or issue or whatever language you want to use that is working for me? Hypervigilance is something that either keeps people safe or has them feel safe. I don't care to distinguish the difference right now. It keeps your head on a swivel. You're walking through a dangerous part of town, or you're at home and you make sure that the doors are locked, things like that. If it helps you feel safe and it's not a problem for you, then it's not a problem for us as a therapist. It's not our job to determine what a problem is for you.
So how does that relate to outcome resistance?
So sometimes someone comes in with a problem that they do want to work on, but they're struggling to accomplish it because they're enjoying the benefits of the problem or the issue. So for example, they have PTSD and they're hypervigilant, but it's preventing them from falling asleep at night because they continue to check the doors or locks, or they have OCD and they spend so much time checking the doors so many times, or they wash their hands so many times that their hands become cracked and bleeding and it's distressing for them, or it's impairing them from completing their job. But they like that they check the doors because they feel safe. What helps someone move past this, I wouldn't say inability, that's going too far, but just this fact that they enjoy a benefit of the problem or issue as they see it, is just needing to be acknowledged that it's okay that there is something about the problem that works for them.
Yeah, I think when it comes to the idea of outcome resistance, sometimes we think we should change in a certain way, right? So people might think, oh, I should really, I'm trying to think of a non-offensive option. All the ones that are coming to my mind are
That's usually my job. Good job, Jen.
I'm doing what I can.
I had neuro, so I know more words now, apparently.
One of the things that I see is some people are like, well, I need to change this habit so that I can improve my relationship, when really the bigger problem is if they get rid of some of their habits and spend more time with their spouse, they will actually have to confront the fact that they don't like their spouse, so it's probably not a healthy relationship.
Ooh, that's a great one. A lot of people I work with don't recognize that. Yeah, no, I mean, like,
we talk about that a lot, the three of us.
Yeah, we don't feel that about our spouses. Let's just be very...
Rachel, Matt, Joe, we love you. No, but in therapy, we talk about it in the context of therapy, that people are worried if they work on the relationship or they get into recovery from substances or they work on out of control sexual behavior, that what if my spouse doesn't like me, or et cetera?
Or what if I work through all these,
et cetera, et cetera.
So, no, you're good. You're et cetera, you know. No, but maybe it's also the idea of what if my partner has issues and things like that, and I'm the person who's like, oh, I'm fine with it. It doesn't really matter. But I'm someone who is constantly finding myself goal-oriented, doing things, accomplishing tasks, very busy with my time. What if all of a sudden I don't have all those things? Do I still feel like those things are okay that my spouse is doing that? Because now I actually have to sit and confront it. Am I actually okay with the relationship? Because a lot of people, they're like, oh, I'm fine if they do A, B, and C. But I look at their schedule and I go, well, do you ever have time to really think about it? Because you are from sunup to sundown constantly busy. You have no alone time with them. So it may be theoretically, oh, yes, I'm fine with it. But if you actually have to sit with it, how are you feeling? Right? How does that look?
As we're talking about it, I'm thinking about too, you could revisit the episodes with the drama triangle, right? If I pull out of the drama triangle and I'm no longer the villain or the victim or the hero, what if I don't like, and what if my partner isn't willing to do that as well? So for example, say I heal my childhood trauma and I start to like myself and I start to validate my feelings and I start to say, hey, I actually deserve to be able to talk about my own feelings and for life to be about something other than my partner, there are relationships that would kill the relationship if one of them got healthy and the other one chose not to. And vice versa, say you feel really connected socially because of some habit, whether it be watching sports or drinking or anything like that, and all of a sudden you're like, okay, I need to pull back and this is something I need to change. And then all of a sudden what you realize is there were some needs being met by extreme behaviors, and it's really hard to meet those needs in other ways.
A great example with that, and so that's where there is some resistance for having a good motivational outcome of what you're ideally thinking of. Like, there's some resistance actually getting there. One example is I had someone I knew, who was in a dental program, and, they were charged with, they would, in order to get so many practicum hours, I think is what they had to do. They had to do so many teeth cleaning, things like that. So they offered services for free teeth cleanings in some, lower economic areas. And they, had this one person come in that a lot of plaque, a lot of different things, but they realized actually very quickly as they were cleaning this person's teeth, like usually the goal is, right? The goal is get rid of all of that, help them have the perfect situation. Their plaque in their teeth had actually formed, and it's been decades, it was holding their teeth together.
Whoa, really?
If they did remove it, they would actually have to remove teeth, kind of a thing.
What?
It's very strange, kind of gross, very strange though. But it had actually formed where it was now helping them. And they made sure everything was okay. And again, I'm not a medical person. This is just what the story was told. So if I'm off on this, if someone's listening and they're like, there's no way that could happen, I apologize ahead of time, but this is just what I was taught. But you also see this, like, and so it was one of those things where the thing that is the issue was actually helping them. Yes, they could have a completely clean scenario with none of that. And that would be part of that motivation to have like a clean smile, but it would actually probably not detrimental, but it would mean a very different thing than what was actually happening with the problem there. You also see this thing a lot with situations of, like Taylor was saying, about someone who has high anxiety and actually helps their performance level. Someone who, you know, is, I'm thinking of also like first responders, cops, different things like that, where they have to be hypervigilant at times. People in the armed services, where getting rid of that high vigilance could actually impact their performance at times and impact their safety. So just some of those like physical examples of where we see that, but especially that one where we're talking about dental stuff, that one has always stuck to me, is this idea of like, oh, that's going to kind of be considered outcome resistance if I, you know, they're not getting the full goal achieved of having everything cleaned out and doing what it needs to. However, they balanced it out and said, you know what, you're deciding to keep it so that you can keep everything as it's looking. We'll just make sure everything is cleaned up. But yeah, that would be considered outcome resistance.
Yeah. So to that point, outcome resistance in session or in our personal life, if you're listening to the podcast, to decide what to do about it, you just make a decision tree and you weigh the pros and cons of whatever decision. And if you decide that there are more benefits to staying the same than to changing, great, you get to choose to stay the same. However, if there are more benefits to changing, then you go like, wow, you know, there really are some benefits to the way I have been doing. And like you'd said, Jen, like you grieve them and maybe see if there are some ways to keep that in your life. But it helps people, certainly helped me to say, okay, this makes sense why it was so hard for me to change and get to take a step forward. In our early on in the podcast, we were going through the emotions. I think I shared that I used to not have any emotions. And I was very resistant to being explained that, you know, to be a therapist, you have to have emotions. And sure enough, I, you know, weighed the pros and cons. I was like, hey, you know, you can be a good therapist or you can be a less than average one. I was like, oh, I want to be a less than average one, so I guess I'll change. But it helped me to weigh the pros of what I got out of cutting off my emotions to be able to like, okay, let's jump into the deep end. This is going to suck and do the work.
Yeah.
So I love that you brought that up because I actually think one of the things that most people resist who've had a lot of trauma, especially, is they resist giving up their dissociation.
Yeah, that's a very common one. Yeah.
Right. Like I actually feel really good about the fact that when I, you know, not me personally, but this is theoretically, although I might do it some personally too, I want to watch Netflix, because when I stop, and this is very common with people who start a new goal, oh, I actually am no longer managing my emotions with food or exercise or pornography or alcohol or medication. I actually just have to feel all my emotions. And then they're like, whoa. I'm just kidding. I don't actually care enough to feel all my emotions. And really, I think what I want to bring up with that is you have a new skill set. And this is very common when we move out of the drama triangle. Right. We've talked about that without reviewing it, is you have to decide what you want to create. If you're like, no, I want to be somebody who just dissociates from my life and disconnects and that serves me. Okay. Their dissociation is natural and it can happen and it helps people survive, but it also keeps you from living life within that emotional realm, like Taylor was starting to explain. Mm-hmm. And you can't enjoy family and hobbies and relationships to the same level if you're constantly dissociated.
And you can't be a supervillain, even if you want to stay on the drama triangle. You'll just be a regular villain.
Exactly. So your performance will not ever peak.
Just this is making me think a lot about people who I work with who have deep trauma, who have learned how to dissociate or to not go into that. They're coming to me and saying, I want to be healthy. There's going to be some outcome resistance if they aren't willing to go into that. As someone who has a trauma background, not just in training, but like been through a lot of trauma, I usually don't share a lot in that as far as like a personal setting, but I have a lot of, you know, past histories that I had to do a lot of EMDR and ART about. And that's
why we became therapists.
Yeah, kind of. that fell in later, but it was something that honestly, being a therapist, very quickly into being a therapist and actually being in grad school, I realized, okay, I got to kind of like Taylor mentioned for him. In order for me to be a most effective therapist and also not have something where this is going to bring up issues, I got to start working on it now. And I had spent a very long time explaining my way out of why I don't need to revisit trauma, why I don't need to revisit past events, or why I was above it, right? And that's fine if someone feels that way. But for me, you know, I spent a couple of years with one therapist and then moved and then spent years with another therapist. And he was very blunt of like, okay, you can continue to kind of ignore all these different things that happened and not process them. That's fine. It's working for you. You're a well-rounded person. You're not coming to me because you're in crisis and something needs to change. You're coming to me because you're like, hey, I know I got to work on this. Let's essentially elective surgery kind of thing of I am choosing to open this up and look at it now because there's a potential it could become a problem, but right now it's not, but let's do it while I'm feeling grounded. And he was like, you could, or you could keep avoiding it. So it's totally up to you. It's working for you either way, but this might be healthier for you to do it now.
What was on the other end of working on the trauma that you were avoiding?
Like why was I avoiding it?
Yeah. Cause choosing to open up or not wanting to open up would be process resistance.
Yeah. I guess the outcome, I think one thing would be, I was worried that it would make me more emotional if I did work on it. Yes. So if I opened it up, then it was the fear of, well, now I've opened it up and now I've become very emotional. Right. And now I'm an emotional person. And it was that idea of if I let the emotions start, how will I ever get rid of them?
Feeling out of control, potentially.
Feeling out of control, feeling triggered, making it so that it was something I would have to continue to acknowledge throughout my life rather than continuing to keep it in that nice little closet. So the outcome would be, now this is a thing that I do have to state happened and have to come to a realization it happened. Secondly, this might change me and make me more emotional because I'm going to intentionally bring up emotions. And I think you bring up a good point there. A lot of the times outcome resistance can be a misunderstanding of what will happen in the outcome. So our fear of what is in the outcome is in the moment one thing, but we come to find out later the outcome is going to be something different. And so the outcome resistance that was there originally may not be based off of reality, what will actually be the outcome.
Jen. I was going to say Dr. Burns actually brings that up as the magical thinking around outcome resistance, is that a lot of people imagine what the outcome will be, but it's not always the outcome, right? Mm-hmm. So we imagine we're going to lose this. We imagine that if I open the box of emotions, they're just going to float around and never change, versus the reality of through the process, right? You learn to manage them. So they aren't out there ruining your life. They're out there and you now manage them versus you lock them in the closet.
I'm laughing at myself right now. Two things tried to come out at the same time. Log jam. In the abuse episodes, the trauma episodes, we talked about hooks that keep people stuck. Mm-hmm. In outcome resistance, a lot of times people have incomplete information, or they have things, like you said, Jen, that are magical thinking, things that are not true. And finding out more about what it looks like on the other side of change can help people feel better about knowing the pros of change in that decision tree. When I was making the decision to work on my emotions, one of the things I was concerned about is that my wife, Rachel, by listening to this, you completely agree to me sharing this publicly, was going to be, it's a binding contract.
There you go.
Was going to become a more emotional person. And I was terrified of emotions. And what turned out to be was that she was carrying the emotional load of the relationship. And so she was feeling the feelings of two people. And when I started to feel my feelings, she no longer had to carry the load for both of us. And she felt loads better. And so that was helpful for me to learn. And so jumped in with two feet. And sure enough, that turned out to be true.
It's interesting. We sometimes think that if we don't change, that nothing will change. We believe that if I don't process this trauma, if I don't stop dissociating, that life will always be neutral. Where part of the, I'm going to go back to Haley, your example with the teeth. Here's one of the truths I know about dental health. It affects your heart. So it may be if
yeah, the mouth is teeth, weird.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It may be keeping your teeth in line. Your dissociation may be protecting you in some way, but it's also affecting you. And so in if you ways, do yeah. have some, yeah. And so I think it's important to realize, like, similarly, when I started working on my physical health, and that was just me saying, I'm going to stop processing all my emotions through a pantry, refrigerator, ice cream carton. I'm going to start actually feeling things. At some point, it would have been, and it was, detrimental to my health. And so learning new ways to process emotion rather than those have been something that I've been working for the last 5 years. But it's actually magical thinking to think you will be able to maintain the unhealthy coping and it won't deteriorate.
It won't have a consequence.
Yeah. And no, that makes sense. And I think that's just part of the, I say that with a lot of compassion because I think it is really scary to change coping skills. And especially if you develop those coping skills in a traumatized way, meaning you thought that was the only way to stay safe.
Yeah. Along those lines, one of my favorite interventions, tools, whatever the word is in therapy, and that I use personally in my own life, is you make a map, you make it whatever you want, and then just make areas of your life like sleep, the grocery store, work, friends, church, family, whatever. And then you pick a topic that maybe you're struggling with, you're not sure you want to work on. And then you shade in each area on the map according to how much that thing affects your life. So let's say the neighbor across the street is bugging you, or let's say childhood trauma, or let's say an addiction that you're not sure you want to work on. So you would shade in how much it shows up. And let's say it's affecting your sleep, like you can't get up in the morning or you have nightmares about that thing. So you would shade in sleep as much as it affects you. And then at the end, you look at how much the map is colored in, and every single time it shocks people how much they've colored in the map. They're like, ah, oh, crap, it affects me more than I realized.
Mm-hmm. You guys should make some kind of ad or something like, why you should work on your trauma, because it affects more than you realize.
Oh, it crap. Showed up in Disneyland.
It showed up. It does. And I love that we can say that because, again, we're outcome resistant because of fear, but that is also in that magical anxiety thinking, right? Of this might ruin everything, but I can tell you that when you actually pursue healthy emotional processing, life gets better in ways you can't imagine either. So it's not doing it will affect you in ways you can't imagine, but doing it will also provide great growth. And I just, as somebody who was resistant for a long time, and I probably am resistant to several things right now that I'm not being aware of, but I've seen it bless my life in many, many ways, and the lives of my clients when they do it. And we have to kind of sit with that. And that's mm-hmm. what therapists are for, is to sit together with you through the fear and say, yeah. is it worth it? And so I love that imagery, because then your boxes get a little more less shaded and Disneyland becomes a better place, as Taylor.
Yeah, because then you're not worried about running into that person that you haven't forgiven, or because of that memory at Disneyland. It just becomes an easier place to navigate. And then you could go down the frozen food section at the grocery store. I know someone listening to this. Sorry, that was a personal reference.
I was like, whoa, this got all Disney, frozen food.
We're not going to open that box.
we don't go there.
Where were we going? Someone listening to this podcast, I'm sure, is thinking about someone that they love or that they like, someone near and dear to them. Like, oh man, yeah, that person is totally outcome resistant to something that they need to work on. And I want to just remind everyone that as we've been talking about kinds of resistances, it's only a problem for someone if it's a problem to them.
Mm-hmm.
So as you listen to this podcast, I encourage you to think about how you might be resistant to an outcome in your own life before thinking about someone in your life. Thanks for listening. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Please feel free to rate, subscribe, and review. And if you want to find us on social media, we're on Instagram and Facebook at Fate Resilience. We'd love to hear from you.